Elizabeth, you look ravishing. It's going to be a big night for everybody involved.
Oh, yes, it is, Gene. I'm just worried that somebody might get hurt.
Well, that happens in this kind of...
Elizabeth!
You're drooling, George, please.
Manager!
That's right, George. She is the manager of the Intercontinental Champion, Macho Man Randy Savage.
Manager!
That's right.
George's manager!
Well, not yet, George. You're going to have to win Elizabeth in the match tonight. You understand that?
Win? Elizabeth! Bye-bye!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 483 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 19, 2017. I am the Solid Monster. Had a lot of fun at the Five Borough Wrestling Show here in Brooklyn on Friday night. Shout out to them. They always put on a great show. The Man of Steel, Mike Verna, Hansen from War Machine and Ring of Honor was there. JT Dunn, Matt Stryker wrestled. Fire Ant. Everybody went crazy for Fire Ant. He was there. It's a sold-out show, too. Standing room only. I've never seen it that packed in that building before, and that is not a very big building. So that was very cool. They had Vice. Vice was there doing some filming for a piece they're working on, so very cool to see them doing so well. You know, I say it all the time, but if you have an independent wrestling show coming to your town, if they're having an event nearby and you've never gone before, go. Support them. I've yet to go to an indie wrestling show where I did not have any fun. And chances are you'll see some faces on there that'll end up being on WWE television or NXT in the not-too-distant future. You know, a year ago, I was watching guys in this promotion like Drew Gulak and Tony Nese, you know, wrestling on these shows, and now they're on Raw every week. As a matter of fact, Brandon Watts, who I interviewed here on the podcast last year, he is a star on the rise. Does a lot of independent wrestling, really up and down the East Coast. But he broke his neck in the ring last year, and he underwent surgery, you know, very serious stuff. Well, he's finally been cleared, and he's about to make his comeback at the Beyond Wrestling event on the 26th, which is a week from today in Providence, Rhode Island. I know he's worked his ass off to get back. He's another one I think we'll be seeing a lot more of in the future. But anyway, had a lot of fun. If you have the chance to do so, whether you're East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, what have you, there's indie wrestling all over the place. Support them and check it out. Speaking of support, you can support this podcast and get yourself a free book if you want. Use our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Audible has been a great sponsor of this podcast, and they have been providing free books, courtesy of the Sound Off, to a ton of people now. And if you have not yet cashed in, I don't know what you're waiting for. There's a ton of wrestling books on there. Doesn't have to be a wrestling book. It could be a Batman book. It could be a Lord of the Rings book. Whatever they have available on there, if you've been thinking about it, or you've never tried the audiobooks before, you can listen to them if you're on your way to school, work, at the gym. You can sign up for a 30-day trial. You've got to go through the sign-up process. If you cancel before those 30 days are up, you will not be billed. But you get to cash in one free audiobook that you get to keep even if you cancel. So take advantage of that, audibletrial.com/solomonster. And you could also become a PayPal VIP if you want to get yourself a shout out here on the podcast, or not. If you just want to donate, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. The PayPal button is right there on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get your wrestling nickname. I want to say thank you this week to, we got a pretty sizable roll call here, but I definitely want to give these people their just due because they have shown their support for this podcast in ways that I can't quite put into words how much I appreciate. But John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, The Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, True Grit Tim Goggin, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Lord Have Mercy, Versi Jones, the Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velato, the Prince of Pleasantville, Emilio Crockett, Jerome Glorious King, wishing a happy belated birthday to his father, Jerome King Sr., the Glasgow Godfather, Scott Curry, who is running a 24-hour charity video game stream. This is pretty cool, and I know some of you guys are big gamers, so you might have an interest in this. And it's for a good cause. He's doing a 24-hour charity video game stream. He's raising money for a charity called Special Effect. And anything you can contribute would help. Just go to justgiving.com, and in the search bar you could type in the words Gaming Real. R-E-E-L. That's Gaming Real. It'll be the very first fundraiser you see listed. So if you like video games, or even if you don't, help out if you can. Also, shout out to Montese, Antoine Moore. He's going to be performing live at the WrestleCon launch party in Orlando, Thursday, March 30th at 4 p.m., hosted by Matt Stryker. You can get your tickets right now at WrestleCon.com. I know that's a big deal for Antoine, so if you're headed to Orlando for all the festivities, as I am that weekend, I don't think I'll be able to hit up WrestleCon, but if you're heading down there, definitely make that one of your first stops. And finally, the boys from Bite That Wrestling Podcast. If you are looking for another fun show that covers WWE but does not spend the entire time complaining about Roman Reigns, and in fact they don't, but you can check them out every Wednesday. Just search for Bite That, that's B-Y-T-E, That. Remember Bite This back in the day on WWE.com? Well, this is Bite That. You can check them out on iTunes, or you can go to BiteThat.com. Check them out. They've got a pretty good show going there. All right, so now I have an announcement to make that's tied in with WrestleMania. I know a lot of you have been asking me about this. Obviously, I have the new Sound Off Orlando shirt is up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tee, so I encourage everybody to go and buy the shirt, as Kevin Nash used to say. I don't do it as well as he did, but remember Kevin Nash with the NWO shirt back in the day? Buy the shirt! Yeah, well, why did that sound like my balls were in a vice there? I won't do that, but you can get the shirt right now. It's up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. If you want to have it in time for WrestleMania weekend, if you're headed down there, do not wait until the last minute, because it can, depending on where you are, it could take a couple of weeks to ship. And so I would encourage you, if you are thinking about it, go ahead and buy the shirt now so you'll have it in time. I am hosting a meetup, like the one I did in August for SummerSlam. That one I partnered with Mania Crawl, and I'm sure we'll do stuff together in the future. In fact, they're having another Mania Crawl event in Orlando, and I'll show them some love once we get a little bit closer, because Jamie does a great job with those events. This is going to be separate from that. I'm hosting a meetup. This is not a live podcast like the one we did in Dallas. I'm kind of bummed that I'm not going to be able to do it, but just logistically and schedule-wise, I just could not make it work this year. But we are going to have a meetup. It will be on WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd, from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., and it will be at the Tin Roof Orlando. Tin Roof Orlando, which is, it's a bar slash restaurant slash live music joint. It's right on International Drive, 8371 International Drive, to be specific. It's about 9 miles, maybe just under 9 miles away from Camping World Stadium, so that's about a 20-minute drive by car, figure, from Tin Roof to the stadium if you're going to WrestleMania. So that should give people plenty of time to get there, and, I mean, the pre-show, I mean, you figure their pre-show probably doesn't start until 5 p.m. anyway. But you always want to give yourself time. You're pulling up into that big stadium. You got to imagine there'll be traffic. You got to find a place to park. You got to wait in line. So time-wise, this should work out perfectly for everybody who's planning on going there. And this is, you know, again, this is just meant to be a very casual thing. This is not some formal event. Just, you know, come on down and hang out with other wrestling fans and other fans of the podcast. That's really what this is. It'll be fun to meet you guys. I'm sure I'll see some familiar faces there. It's right near the Orlando Eye, which is it's this 400-foot-tall giant Ferris wheel that they have down there. And the cool thing about Tin Roof, besides the fact they have good food from everything I've heard, they have $15 bottomless mimosas and Bloody Marys until 3 p.m. on Sundays. Now, that's not my drink of choice, but if it's yours or if it's your girlfriend's or what have you, then that's the place I think that you want to be. So, and plus, you know, if last year's WrestleMania is any indication of what we may be in for this year, I think you may need some alcohol to help you get through the rest of the day. So you can never start too early. 11:30, 12:30, whenever you show up, you can never start too early. So what I'll do, I'll get a Facebook invite event up with all the information in it. If you would be so kind as to RSVP, if you can attend, it's not a requirement. You don't have to. You can just show up. There is no cover charge. I'm not selling tickets. You don't have to pay a dime for this. So let's just have a good time before WrestleMania. 11:30 to 2:30. WrestleMania Sunday, Tin Roof Orlando on iDrive. I'll talk more about that as we get closer. Elimination Chamber was last Sunday. I got a full review, well over 30 minutes for the pay-per-view up on our YouTube channel, so I encourage you to go there and check that out. The final poll results, because I put a poll up on Twitter, over 3,000 votes, 88% thumbs up, only 12% thumbs down, so an overwhelmingly positive response to this pay-per-view. And understandable, because the entire show was not great. There was some pretty dull stuff on this show, but the main event, I can't give a thumbs down to a show that has a main event like that. The main event, the chamber match, was excellent. Randy Orton and Luke Harper just underneath was very good. And so for those two matches alone, I gave this pay-per-view a thumbs up. As far as the chamber match, I would have to go back and re-watch each one of them, but I would put this up there in the realm of best Elimination Chamber matches the company's ever produced, if not the best. I very much enjoyed it. The fans were into it. A lot of great action, you know, pretty much nonstop action. They changed the chamber up a little bit now. It looks a little bit different, not radically different, but definitely there are changes that are noticeable, and I liked it. I think it still looks pretty badass. Now, there is one thing. Instead of having the metal grate outside, like when you throw somebody over the ropes, they land on the steel, they now have pads there. I would imagine there's steel underneath the pads, but there's pads. There's pretty thick black padding there now. And I saw some people complaining about this, like, oh, the pads, you've got to be kidding me. Oh, they've pussified the Elimination Chamber. The pads didn't bother me at all. I'm looking at all this criticism, and I'm saying to myself, are you kidding me? Like, Are you really complaining about the fact that they replace the grate, the metal, the steel grate with pads? Probably just to protect, well, twofold. Number one, to protect these guys who I'm sure get their asses kicked every time they're in there. And number two, you know, look, there's moves and things they could do now that were just not safe to do before. There's certain things you just can't do on a surface like that. Well, now with the pads, they could probably, you know, they could backdrop guys in there. They could frickin' pile drive somebody on there if they want to. Not that I expect the pile driver. But it's done for safety. I mean, are we really complaining about this? And before people throw it back in my face, well, you know, you did take issue with the fact that we don't have, like, a lot of blood and Hell in a Cell anymore, and that's kind of a safety issue. Well, from WWE's perspective, yes, it's a safety issue. But that's different. I don't look at that as exactly the same thing. I look at that, I mean, to me, you know, when you're trying to get blood in a match, it's more just for effect. I mean, these guys have been cutting themselves and bleeding going back how many years now? And I'm actually okay with the fact that we don't have blood in every single match anymore. I just look at certain types of matches, Hell in a Cell being one of them, and I say, man, you know, it is kind of unrealistic not to have Hell in a Cell matches very often these days where you just don't see any blood because guys are throwing, you know, you're throwing somebody into the steel, you're doing the cheese grater thing on the steel, and, you know, obviously we don't get blood the way that we used to, and I do think it takes away from the match a little bit, but that's different from this match. I don't think having pads out there took away from this match one iota. One iota. It was still a brutal match. Guys were diving off the top of the pods, throwing guys through that Lexan glass they love to talk about. I mean, the pads didn't bother me at all. And I think it's complete, I just think it's bullshit for people to be putting up such a freaking fuss over pads to just protect these guys. These guys are busting their asses in there. It's bad enough, you know, some of the abuse they take, but you know, whatever. That's part of the job description. So they put pads in there just to protect them a little bit more. I'm sure guys complained, you know. I mean, look, The blue bar steel cage. Remember the old school blue bar steel cage? I love that cage. I grew up on that cage, and I wish they would bring that cage back. But that cage hurt like a motherfucker. I've heard guys do interviews, guys from that era who wrestled inside that cage. That cage fucking hurt. So they got rid of it, and they brought back the old, you know, chain link mesh cage. Now, I don't like it as much. And also, they had that cage because you gotta remember, back in that era, you had guys like Hogan and Bundy and, like, these gigantic men, 300, 400 pounds, and they couldn't climb the chain link cage. It was a lot easier for someone like Hogan. I wouldn't be surprised if they did it specifically for Hogan. For a guy like Hogan, who was in a lot of cage matches with Bundy and Orndorff and Bossman and just a lot of different people, Andre, it's a lot easier for him to climb and get his big feet in there, you know, and climb up over the cage. So I think that was as much why we saw that cage as anything. But I know there were guys that complained, and after a while they stopped using it. And I'm never going to be one to complain about, you know, when it comes to safety issues and things of that nature. I have no problem with them putting the pads in. If it bothers you, I don't know what to say. But it didn't bother me. It didn't bother a lot of people. I actually think the new chamber looks kind of cool. And I thought that main event was just excellent. You know, Bray Wyatt finally, you know, reaching the hilltop, finally winning the WWE Championship. And I've been a big fan, as you know, of this ongoing Wyatt storyline. I've been following it. Wasn't sold on it at all at the beginning, but as time has gone on, I've become a big fan of it. And I like what's going on right now at the top on SmackDown. So go head over to YouTube if you want to listen to the full review. That's up there. Unfortunately, this was a terrible week when it came to wrestler deaths. Three of them to talk about, including two of Bruno Sammartino's greatest rivals. First, WWE Hall of Famer George the Animal Steele, real name Jim Myers, died on Thursday night at the age of 79. Kidney failure was the cause. According to TMZ, spoke with his wife. He had been in and out of hospice care since April. I do remember him doing interviews and talking about flatlining during kidney surgery that he had a couple of years ago. So he's had health issues for a while. He was well known for the dreaded flying hammerlock. One of the more disturbing things I've ever seen was a match that he had in the early to mid-80s. I didn't see it. Now, I didn't see this as a kid. I saw this much later on YouTube. He was wrestling some enhancement guy whose name I don't know. And he had the guy's arm, and he bent the guy's arm back so much that he popped his elbow out of the socket. It was freaky looking. The guy was obviously double jointed, just like Alexa Bliss did on SmackDown last month in that match she had with Becky Lynch. So you watch that and it's like, ugh. Had I seen that as a kid, I think I would have been terrified of this guy. But most of my George Steele memories came from when Vince, you know, had already turned him into a comedy figure with the green tongue and the mind doll. And you remember that? The mind doll didn't last very long. My dad would always pop for him when he would eat the turnbuckle pads. He would chase the referee around the ring. He's one of those iconic figures from that 80s kind of golden era. And you hear, like, in mainstream sports, ESPN and stuff, when these things happen, you hear them use names like Jake the Snake and George the Animal Steele. I feel like he's in that same category where even a lot of mainstream folks and sports folks, if you mention that name, they know exactly who you're talking about. They've heard of that name before. Hogan and Savage and Jake and Steele and even the Million Dollar Man, and like, people just know who these guys are because they came up in that era when wrestling went really just mainstream and national. And you know, there weren't very many people who looked like George the Animal Steele. He had the big bushy eyebrows. He had the green tongue. He had the bald head. I've still got my George the Animal Steele LJN figure sitting in the closet somewhere with the rest of them. But, you know, he was a smart guy, too. He got his master's degree before he ever even got into wrestling. He was a high school teacher. He was a coach. And only then did he start to moonlight. I didn't realize this. I did not realize that he only started, you know, moonlighting as a wrestler to make more money. And he kept on teaching. He had to wrestle under a mask because he didn't want people to know what he was doing. He had to keep his identity a secret. And that worked for him for most of his career until he went to WWE. And when WWE went national and they took off, obviously he wasn't able to hide his identity anymore. And so that's when he finally stopped teaching. I did not realize that he was still teaching well into his career. Before that WWE run in the 80s, the one that made him a national name. I mean, really, that's what made him into a national figure. But before that, he had a lot of success as a really vicious heel. It kind of makes me think of the Bushwhackers, just to talk about two other Hall of Famers. Bushwhackers were the sheep herders, and they were some vicious SOBs. And until much later on, you know, well after I was a wrestling fan, and you kind of, you know, the internet became a thing, and you get to look things up and learn things that you didn't know before, it's like these two guys had a whole career before they even came into WWE that you just, you know, you just didn't know about. And they went to WWE, and they ended up with this comedy gimmick, and that's really what they became known for. And I've heard the Bushwhackers even say that they don't really regret that. They don't hate that. They kind of like the fact that they ended up with that gimmick and everything, because that's how and why people still remember them today. If they were just the sheep herders going around as these badass heels, their name recognition would probably be nowhere near what it is today. And there was no way that gimmick would have worked back then in WWE. So yeah, they'll happily take all of the name recognition and the exposure they got as the Bushwhackers. But it's kind of a similar thing here, I feel like, where George Steele had this just kind of like monster Neanderthal heel thing going on for him, and it was a pretty vicious guy, and apparently was also a great promo, which blew my mind when I heard that. Very articulate and very well-spoken, the complete opposite of what Vince McMahon wanted. And as the story goes, you know, George, again, he would cut promos and all that, and he was working for Vince McMahon, and I guess Vince just wasn't happy with these promos that George was cutting one night, and he told him, you know, people aren't going to buy this. This is ridiculous. You're supposed to be this monster, this killer, and you're talking like, you know, you're this very intelligent, bright individual. And I guess it kind of irritated George, and he wasn't very happy with being told that, you know, don't do it this way, do it a different way. So he just started like grunting, and it didn't make any sense, anything he was saying, but he was just pissed off. He's like, all right, you want me to be like a moron? You want me to be like a Neanderthal? Fine, I'll give that to you. And he's, you know, he cut the promo that way, and Vince was like, I love it. I love it. Keep doing that. And that was it. So that's how George the Animal Steel really came to be. And that's, I think, how most people probably remember him. But he did have that big heel run. Apparently, he's the only man to work main events against Bruno Sammartino, Pedro Morales, Bob Backlund, and Hulk Hogan for the championship. That's pretty impressive. I mean, when you consider the goofy character he turned into later on, that's pretty impressive. To see that, you know, he had these main events against all of the big names, really, of that era. He had the memorable storyline with Randy Savage, where he was infatuated with Elizabeth, you know, Beauty and the Beast. I mean, really, who wasn't infatuated with Elizabeth back then? In my opinion, she's still the prettiest woman I've ever seen on WWE television. She's just a beautiful lady. It was George's interference that cost Randy Savage the Intercontinental title in his match with Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. So then what happened is he became an agent. He became an agent for WWE after he retired. He was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and that's what forced him to retire. Otherwise, he would have kept wrestling. You would be hard-pressed to find many people who have had bad things to say about George Steele, but... and maybe this is not really a shock to some, given his reputation in the last few years, but Bret Hart was one of them. Bret Hart hated this guy's guts. And he did not mince words in that. He did that 1992 timeline with Sean Oliver. And in that video, he explained his hatred for George Steele. And I mean, the guy just died. I don't really want to get into all of it here and rehash all of it right now. But if you want to hear the full story... I did review that timeline. I mean, you could buy the timeline. It's a great video. But if you want to just hear my review, I reviewed it a few years ago on our YouTube channel. So if you just go on YouTube and type in Solomonster Bret Hart timeline, it should be the first thing that comes up. Boy, he did not like George Steele. Matt Taven almost killed George by accident on a botched moonsault out of the ring at an indie show back in, I think, what was it, 2008, 2009? And I don't even know that it was botched by Taven. Maybe botched isn't the right word, but George was making an appearance at this indie show, and he was outside the ring and had his back turned. And it may have just been wrong place, wrong time, but you know, you can see the video online. He almost killed this guy. And by then, I mean, even in 08, George was, you know, George was probably, what was George? If he was 79 now, and that goes back 90, he was 70 years old. And Taven landed right on his head. But I guess he was okay. He survived. We know that. He survived. But he was still making appearances at indie shows and conventions, and I guess he wasn't really doing anything physical in recent years because his health had declined. But, I mean, here's a guy. He was a staple of that era that I grew up in. Even if I did miss his big heel run. He also, and I have to mention this, he recorded sort of a testimonial of his life that was meant to be released upon his death. And it just went up on YouTube just yesterday, I think. It's an hour long. And it's a series of videos. I guess his health was such that he couldn't record the whole thing in one take. But it's him on video in his home, giving the story in his own words of his entire life. His life, his career, as told by Jim Myers himself. It's fascinating to watch. So I encourage everybody to go watch it. Just type in A Walk Through Life. That's the name of it. A Walk Through Life with Jim Myers. And it should come right up. And it's just, it's pretty fascinating stuff. Again, you watch it. And he says right at the beginning, he's like, if you're watching this, it means I'm dead and I'm with Jesus. So I guess as soon as he died the other day, whoever helped film this for him, they put the video up. And again, it's about an hour long, so you should definitely check that out. Another big name who passed away this week was the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff, best known as the man who beat Bruno Sammartino to win the WWWF title back in 1971. One of the most iconic matches in pro wrestling history. Bruno had been champion for pretty much almost eight straight years, okay? And people complained about John Cena. Can you imagine if the internet was around back then, the things they would have been saying about Bruno by that point? Oh my God. So he died. Koloff died this week after a battle with liver cancer, 74 years old. That win over Bruno was Bruno's only pinfall loss, I believe, ever. Certainly up to that point in Madison Square Garden. And there is footage from that match online. The audio is not great. I think there might have been commentary added to it years after the fact, because I don't think there would have been commentary that night. But the footage is online. I interviewed Bill Apter last summer, and you can find that interview on the YouTube channel. He was there that night. And in fact, he was tipped off, I think it was by Bruno, who tipped him off in advance that the title was going to be changing hands. And I think they kind of tipped off Bill because they wanted to make sure Bill got good photos. So it's like, hey, something big's going down tonight. You better make sure you got your film and everything you need. And although nobody ever told him what the finish was going to be, they didn't tell him exactly how it was going to end, but he kind of knew, okay, something big's going down tonight. But he said, you know, Apter said, and I think even Bruno has said, when the referee counted three and Koloff won, it was like a funeral in Madison Square Garden. And back then, the old MSG could fit about 21,000 people. They had 21,000 people in that building, and you could hear a pin drop. It was just this feeling of utter and complete shock. And Bruno thought he ruptured his eardrum because he couldn't hear any noise. That's how quiet it was. Very, very eerie. But 3 weeks later, Koloff dropped the belt to Pedro Morales, so Koloff was pretty much using the same role that the Iron Sheik was many years later. He was a transitional champion by definition. He was there to get the title off of one babyface and onto another. And then he had success in the NWA. Many years later, he was part of the Russians or Nikita Koloff and Crusher Khrushchev. But that win that night in Madison Square Garden over Bruno was the pinnacle. It was the highlight and of his career and the one singular event for which he will always be remembered. Nicole Bass is the final name here who passed away this week. We go from George the Animal Steele and Ivan Koloff to Nicole Bass. Talk about two totally different generations. She passed away on Friday. This is per Ryan Satin over at Pro Wrestling Sheet. There were a lot of erroneous reports that she had passed away earlier in the week based on a Facebook post that her girlfriend put up, but I guess her girlfriend just... Not that she was misleading people, but she pretty much knew the end was near, and so she mentioned that Nicole had passed away, but she actually had not passed away. I guess sat and called the hospital directly. Boy, these TMZ guys, they don't give up. And he called the hospital. He was told that she was brain dead and that she was going to be taken off life support, but she had not yet been taken off life support. So technically she was still alive until, I guess, Friday night they took her off. No word on the cause of death. I've seen stroke mentioned. I've seen heart attack mentioned, but until it's official, there really is nothing confirmed. What we know is that she got sick earlier in the week and the doctors did their best to save her, but there really was nothing more that they could do. She was only 52 years old. She was a bodybuilder before she got into pro wrestling. She was actually in ECW first. Then she ended up in WWE. Did not spend very long there at all. She came in as Sable's bodyguard at WrestleMania, so that would have been in March of 99, and by July the company had gotten rid of her. She filed a lawsuit against the company years later, alleging sexual harassment. I know that she accused the Brooklyn Brawler of doing some stuff to her. Once I hear the words Brooklyn Brawler and sexual harassment, I just have no interest in exploring any further. So exactly what he was alleged to have done, I have no idea. All I know is the case was dismissed. She also was very well known as a member of Howard Stern's Whack Pack. He's lost a lot of Whack Packers over the years. Unfortunately, now you can add her to the list. By all accounts that I've seen, she was a really nice lady. She was very well liked, the people she worked with in ECW and WWE. I saw Lance Storm and Tommy Dreamer, and people had some very nice things to say about her. It's a shame. I mean, 52, for God's sake. I mean, it sucks. In a year where already wrestling has lost Jimmy Snuka, Chavo Guerrero Sr., George the Animal Steele, Ivan Koloff, Tim Smith, let's not forget about him. He may not have been a big, big star, but he was, you know, one half of Well Done. He passed away. Nicole Bass. You got Vader, who keeps tweeting like he's got one foot in the grave. And we're only 2 months into the new year, which I think is a bad omen for the next 10 months. Rosa Mendez, in more positive news, has announced her retirement from WWE. What exactly she's retiring from was not made clear, since she never really did wrestle. But from the moment they signed her to a developmental deal to the moment she retired, she spent 10 years working for WWE. 10 years! And I cannot remember a single match of hers of any note. Not even one that was marginally good. That's an accomplishment. I say put her in the Hall of Fame for that alone. In all of those years, she only had one singles win on TV, and it was by disqualification. 6 years ago, it was a match on SmackDown against Layla. That's it. That is it. I know she was with Fandango for a while. She was with the Matadors in their corner for a while. I don't remember anything else of any note that she did in nearly a decade with that company. That's just astounding to me. There was the episode with Michael Hayes where Hayes was reprimanded because it came to light that he was seen with her at a bar. It was well known she had substance abuse issues, and here's Michael Hayes, one of the executives in the company who's out drinking with her, which is not a very smart thing to be doing. And there might have been some other stuff between her and Michael. I mean, you could draw your own conclusions. I don't know all the details, but there was that as well. So whatever it was, whatever kept her around, it certainly wasn't her her in-ring ability. So whatever, look, whatever. Whatever it was, I know she was pregnant, she had to take time off, she had a kid, and the reason that I guess she announced her retirement now was she timed it for the 1 year anniversary of her child, which is very nice, and hopefully she's very happy with her new life, and I wish her nothing but the best. But I think if you were to make a list, as some people do, each of the last 9 or 10 years, of people who, if you were in charge of WWE and you had to trim the fat, who would you cut? Who would you get rid of? If you had a, kind of fine-tune the roster and get rid of people and bring in new people. I guarantee you that if you made a top 5, top 10, top 15, top 3, top 20, whatever it is, Rosa Mendez would probably be a name on everybody's list. And the fact that she did spend so long in that company is, hey, you know, what can I say? It's a testament to her. It really is. Clearly, she never had any business being in the ring at all. She was just awful. But she was a good dancer. You know, she could dance around. She could shake her ass. She was good at that. And you know, that's kind of what they used her for here and there. And then she would disappear. And then she would come back and she would disappear. And this is a hell of a bio. I know. This is a hell of a biography for her. But I really don't know what else there is to say other than, you know, happy trails. It was a week where there were three first-time champions crowned on WWE television. Bray Wyatt won the WWE title for the very first time. Bayley won the Raw Women's title for the very first time, which I have some thoughts on that. And Naomi won the SmackDown Women's title for the very first time. So we will start with Raw. Raw was live last week from Las Vegas. Over 2,500 votes in our Twitter poll. 68% thumbs up, 32% thumbs down. And, you know, for all the talk about how bad Raw has been to sit through lately, and I am one of those people, this makes 3 weeks in a row, I think it's 3 weeks in a row, of thumbs up winning over thumbs down here in this poll. So they must be doing something right. That last hour, I have to say, that last hour on Monday was tremendous. And that is in spite of a match between Cesaro and Enzo Amore that had one of the most embarrassing botches that I have seen in a long, long time. I'll use a movie analogy for Enzo, okay? Enzo Amore, the talker, okay, on the mic, is like Rocky or The Godfather. Enzo Amore, the wrestler, is fucking Battlefield Earth. So in other words, they need to super glue that microphone to this guy's hand and keep him out of the ring as much as possible. Even with that match, that last hour of Raw between the Festival of Friendship and the women's title match was some of the best stuff on Raw in a long, long time. That and the Samoa Joe, Sami Zayn stuff as well, although I think that came before hour three. Stephanie McMahon opened the show telling us that Mick Foley was gone this week and that she would be the one running things, which is pretty much how it is every single week. True. But once she gave us the heads up, I said, peace out. And I turned the show off and I said, I'll just get to it tomorrow or the day after or whenever. And it was great because I had a lot of shit to do and I was able to go to the gym and do that. And it was great. It's really quite amazing. Instead of sitting there for 3 hours, how productive you can be if you actually just do other things. She is the absolute worst thing about this show. And if I get a heads up in advance that it's going to be 3 hours of the Stephanie McMahon show, you can bet your ass I ain't sitting there for 3 hours and subjecting myself to that. And I encourage you not to either. It'll be good for your sanity. So I didn't, and when I came back to it later on, I was able to fast forward through a lot of the boring stuff. Roman Reigns did beat the Raw Tag Team Champions, Anderson and Gallows. He beat them by DQ, so he did not beat them straight up, which is good. That's the only positive thing I could say about this, because I thought for sure this is going to be a WWE specialty right here, where you have the big super babyface beating the Tag Team Champions for no good reason at all. Of all the people for them to beat, of all the teams, why the Tag Team Champions? We've seen them do this time and time and time again, and normally, they just beat them straight up. So the best thing I could say about this is, they didn't beat them straight up. Anderson and Gallows were beating them down and beating them down, and the referee just threw the match out, and he awarded it to Roman by DQ. However, when the match was over, Roman took them both out. So, there is that. The New Day came out. They showed Bo Dallas in the ring, and my finger slipped and hit the fast forward button. When I hit play, it was finally time for the debut of Emelina. Over 140 days after the very first Emelina return vignette aired on this show, Emelina was finally here. And just as soon as she arrived, she departed. She came out wearing a gold dress. She said the fans had waited 17 weeks for the makeover of Emma to Emelina. And now, we're going to wait to see the makeover of Emelina to Emma. And she turned around and she walked to the back. And that was it. A pile of dog shit this was. So what happened? What the hell happened here? Well, according to Pro Wrestling Sheet, they had big plans for this character. Vince McMahon had big plans for Emelina. They saw this as something similar to, you know, the Sable character back in the day, or the Cat. And Emma just could not portray the character in the way that WWE wanted her to. They had multiple rehearsals that day. They felt that she's just not committed to this character. She's not doing it right. So they dropped it. And it looks like she'll be back to Evil Emma soon, which is awesome. Okay? There was absolutely nothing wrong with Evil Emma to begin with. I thought it was stupid that they were rebranding her at all. And what I want to know is, why did it take them 5 months to figure this out? All the delays for this? I mentioned Sable, I mentioned the Cat. You know what Sable and the Cat had in common? They were not very good wrestlers. Sable was passable. She could pull off a couple of moves. Her power bomb, Sable bomb, whatever the hell it was called. But she wasn't a wrestler. If they're looking for somebody to pull off this Emelina character, why not Dana Brooke? Dana Brooke is not very good. Of all the attributes that Dana Brooke has, of all the things that Dana Brooke has going for her, she's got charisma, she's got the body, she can talk. Wrestling is near the bottom of that list. So why not her? Why not Kelly Kelly? I saw Kelly Kelly was backstage at Raw, and there's been some talk, some scuttlebutt out there that, you know, WWE's bringing in a whole bunch of older divas, former divas. I don't know if it's for just an appearance at WrestleMania, if it's for a match, a battle royal, I have no idea. So I just figured, okay, she's there to, you know, whatever, negotiate and talk, and she'll be at WrestleMania. Now I see these rumors floating around that she's signed a 3-year deal. She's coming back. I don't know that that's confirmed, but that's the rumor. And you know what? Unless she has improved tremendously since leaving the company from what I remember her being, she also is not a very good wrestler. So why not someone like her? And you know what? Who knows? Now that it's not going to be Emma anymore, it may well end up being someone like Kelly Kelly. But I think she'd probably be perfect. Now, I don't know exactly what Vince McMahon sees this Emelina character as. I see these vignettes and I can see where this is going. I get the sense that someone like Kelly Kelly would be a much, much, much better fit for this. The point is, you probably want somebody for this character whose strong suit is not necessarily inside the ring, okay? If they had an idea for a new character they were going to push, it's cool that they thought of Emma. This could have been a big thing for Emma, okay? And I'm not saying she's not, you know, guilty of, you know, just not being invested in the character, and maybe she missed out here on a big opportunity. We'll see. We'll see how far this Emelina character goes if they end up handing it off to someone else and they become a big star. But some people are just not meant for it. But it's cool that they thought of her for it. But you know what? If she was cleared to return in August, which is my understanding, August! Why are they first coming to this conclusion 5 months later? That's what I want to know. Why did it take them this long to figure this out after all those videos and for them to have her... I mean, you know that sketch, that scene from The Simpsons, right? I see that all the time people use it. It's like in GIF form and it's on YouTube. Of, what is it, like Grandpa Simpson walking into a bar, putting his hat like on the coat rack, and immediately turning around and leaving the bar. That's what Emelina was on Monday night. And again, 5 months, it took them to figure that out. I don't understand that at all. I really don't. I don't get that. We had a Michael Cole sit-down interview with Samoa Joe backstage. They cut the crowd noise out for this, which I loved. We don't need to hear these people in the background. Joe is just great. Joe is so great. He said he's a very dangerous man, and because of him, Seth Rollins will miss WrestleMania for the second year in a row. About his win over Roman Reigns in his debut, he said, "I'm not some flash in the pan like Sami Zayn." And Cole brought up guys like Shawn Michaels and Batista and Seth Rollins and Randy Orton, who all had relationships with Triple H that went sour. And Joe said, "Well, I'm not one of those guys." And in fact, Triple H has... he finally has somebody in me that he knows he can trust to get the job done. So Sami Zayn afterwards has a match with Rusev, and he beats Rusev, and he's being interviewed on stage, and he brings up, "Hey, you know, I heard Samoa Joe mention my name earlier," and he goes, "You know, you're damn right Samoa Joe is no Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn doesn't need to take any shortcuts in his career." Well, this brought out Joe. Joe was wearing dress clothes. He came out. He mauled Sami Zayn. He choked him out with the Coquina clutch, left him laying. And then he told Sami, if you say my name, you better put some respect on it. Which I thought was a great line. Now, my question is it respect or is it respect? Right? Is that whole respect thing still a thing? I hope not, because I never really got that. Here's what I would like to see. Honestly, I would much rather see Samoa Joe wrestle Seth Rollins at WrestleMania than Triple H against Seth. And if he wasn't going to make it back in time, if Rollins was not going to be ready for Mania, I would do some sort of non-decision with Joe and Zayn at Fastlane. I assume they're going to have a match at Fastlane. Don't have a conclusive winner in that match. Whatever the finish is, if they just brawl all over the building, or if Joe kills him, or whatever, don't have a decisive finish, and then extend it to WrestleMania. Have the rematch at WrestleMania, and let Joe go over in that match. Either of those two scenarios, to me, are far more preferable than Rollins against Triple H. Just me, because I like what Joe has done so far, and I would like Joe in a prominent role at WrestleMania. And I just feel like if Triple H has the match, you know, he's always going to be a number one, and Joe and anybody else is going to be a number two. And I would like to see the opposite of that. We then had the Festival of Friendship. This segment was so friggin' good. Chris Jericho was putting this big, elaborate celebration on for his best friend, Kevin Owens. It was kind of like not exactly. I've seen some people compare it to Rock and Mankind, This Is Your Life. Not exactly the same concept, but it was similar. Mankind wanted to come out and do something special for his best friend. That's what Chris Jericho did. And he unveiled this $7,000 sculpture that was made in honor of Owens. And they had this portrait of, it's kind of a take off Michelangelo's Creation of Adam. I never knew what the name of that was, believe it or not. Now I do. It's the Creation of Adam. It's good to know. So they had this Creation of Adam knockoff that had Jericho and Owens in it instead, and Jericho wasn't wearing any pants, which freaked out Kevin Owens, who said, look, I can't hang this in my house. I got two kids. You got no pants. He brought out Friendship the Magician, who did some lame magic tricks, and Kevin Owens said, my 9-year-old could do better tricks than that. And Jericho said, yeah, you know, I found a guy on Craigslist. It was probably a mistake. So then Jericho teased Goldberg being there. He goes, I'm going to soften Goldberg up for Fastlane. I feel bad for kind of accepting the match with Goldberg on your behalf for the pay-per-view. So let's bring on Goldberg. And instead, they brought out Gilbert, former Cruiserweight champion. And he came out with the sparkler pyro and the fire extinguisher. It was great. And he looked exactly the same aside from the gray in his beard. Just like Goldberg. He had the gray in his goatee. Kevin Owens quickly laid out Gilbert and just killed him dead. And just didn't have any time for this nonsense. And Jericho, and this is where the segment got really good. So all the goofy stuff is over now. And Jericho, he goes into like his normal voice, like normal human being voice, to make it feel real. And I don't doubt that there was a lot of sincerity behind his words here. He's like, look, I've had such a great time being your friend the last year. It's been one of the best years, one of the best runs of my entire career. And the crowd is applauding. They agree. They love these two guys together. And Jericho says, look, I guarantee you at Fastlane, you're going to beat Goldberg. I'm going to be that right there. I got your back like I always did. But he's thanking him for one of the best years of his career, all the fun he's had. And that's a shoot. And Owen says, yeah, you know what? I'm sorry I got hot at you. I see everything you're doing here. In fact, I got a gift for you too. And he hands him a gift, and Jericho's all excited, and he opens it up, and it's a new list, because now they're selling them, by the way, on WWE Shop. They're selling the list of Jericho. I'm surprised it took them this long, but WWE sometimes gets in on these things very late, when that whole RKO out-of-nowhere phase where, I mean, there were non-wrestling fans I know who knew about that whole RKO out-of-nowhere stuff, and it took WWE a few months to even get a shirt out for Randy Orton. So he gives him, you know, he gives him this gift. It's a brand new list, and Jericho's like, oh, this is great. The old list is getting kind of ratty. And he goes, well, he's like, why is my name on here? And you look at the back of the clipboard, and it says the list of KO. And the camera pans to Owens. Owens drops the mic. He's got this look on his face like, oh, shit. And he attacks Chris Jericho. And you could hear, like, audibly hear people in the crowd chanting, like, no. It kind of reminded me of when that second before Seth Rollins took a chair to Roman Reigns' back when he turned on the Shield. I think you could hear somebody scream, like, no, because they knew what was coming. And it's the same thing. People genuinely loved the Shield. They did not want to see them break up. And I still believe that they prematurely broke up the Shield. But people didn't want to see it. And they were genuinely, like, upset by it. And I think it's the same thing here. People really have been very entertained by Jericho and Owens. I have just been sick to death of the stuff with them and Roman Reigns, but I like Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens together as much as the next person. And they, at that split second before the turn happened, people could see it coming, and I think they were just like, no. They just didn't want to see it. And so he attacks Jericho, he starts stomping on him, and, you know, ripping his clothes off, he takes him out of the ring, he powerbombed Jericho, he gave him the apron powerbomb. And he threw him back in the ring. Now, in the ring, they had this setup. Was it an actual screen? I don't know if it was an actual screen like the Geritron 6000 or whatever. I don't know if it was. I guess it was. I guess it was some kind of monitor that was in the ring. And Owens threw Jericho into the monitor. He threw him into the screen, which shattered. And so I guess it was a screen. But this was very reminiscent of what happened with Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels many years ago on the highlight reel, when Jericho threw Michaels into the thing and gave Michaels the googly eye. And or even before that, you know, people have compared it to the barbershop. Now, the barbershop will never be topped, okay? Don't even try asking me, you know, buy or sell on which, because the barbershop is going to win every single time. I mean, that's just an iconic moment there. And plus, the visual of him throwing Marty through a window like that, and Bobby Heenan saying he tried to dive through the window to escape. Like, nothing will ever top that. I'm sorry. Nothing will ever top that. But there were definitely little, like, subtle things like that here. Callbacks to past angles like that. Jericho, I guess, was bleeding a little from the forehead. This was a heavy angle after all the comedy at the beginning. I don't know that I've seen an angle like this in a long time that went from comedy to just serious. Like, in a split second like that. And it was very effective, and the people booed. And Kevin Owens, for the very first time, maybe in the entirety of his run as Universal Champion, actually came across like a piece of shit. He actually came across like a killer, like somebody who you did not want to mess with. And this is the Kevin Owens that we saw back in NXT. This is the Kevin Owens that we saw who turned on his best friend, as he did again here. Who stands alone, who doesn't have friends, he's a loner, he does his own thing, he's only out for himself, and he's only out for his family. Remember that at the beginning when we first saw Kevin Owens? I did what I did to feed my family. That's what Kevin Owens was all about. And somewhere along the way, he drifted into the same kind of heel shtick that we see all WWE heels doing. And for the first time in a long, long time, we saw that version of Kevin Owens coming out here. And it'll be very interesting to see, you know, I guess, what comes of the meeting with Triple H. Triple H was on the show. He arrived with Samoa Joe, in fact, I believe, in a limo. But he went up to Kevin Owens backstage and said, hey, I need to talk to you. And you know, Jericho stayed behind. And we did see a segment where we saw Triple H talking to Owens in a hallway. We could not pick up on the audio of what was being said, but he was talking to Owens about something. And I have to assume that either directly or indirectly, it will come out that he told Owens to kind of get rid of this guy. Because Kevin Owens was Triple H's hand-picked successor to Seth Rollins. He literally handed the championship to him. And I could see a story where Triple H wanted Kevin Owens to get back to what made him a killer. He wants Kevin Owens to get back to what made him a champion in NXT when he turned on his best friend. And so here he did it again. Jericho did a stretcher job. I want to give a shout out to Justin in the Facebook group for picking up on this, because I sure didn't. When Jericho was being loaded up into the ambulance outside the building, just off to the right, if you look off into the distance, you can see an LED billboard for the arena promoting a Bon Jovi concert this Saturday. It was like, wow, how appropriate, how appropriate. I did not notice that. So thank you to Justin for pointing that out. I love this angle. It was great. It was one of the best things on Raw in many months. And by the way, I have to comment on this. There is a rumor floating around. Where it got started, I do not know. But there is a rumor floating around about a new top heel stable possibly being formed that would consist of Triple H, Kevin Owens, and Samoa Joe. And I know on the surface that, ooh, that sounds really cool. To me, it just reads like Authority 2.0. So I say no thank you. I have no interest in that. I don't like it. You know what I would really be impressed by? You know what I would really like? If Triple H loses to Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, especially, let's say, if Samoa Joe tries to help and it backfires, and so the next night on Raw, Triple H gets up in Joe's face, I would like to see Joe beat the fuck out of him. And Kevin Owens, I'm going to guess Kevin Owens come WrestleMania, post-WrestleMania, he will no longer be the champion by that point. He'll probably won't be the champion in 2 weeks. But even if somehow he makes it past Goldberg, well, I guess if he makes it past Goldberg and faces Jericho for the title, I really don't see Jericho winning the championship. So I shouldn't say that it's a guarantee Kevin Owens won't be champion the night after Mania. I don't think he's making it out of Fastlane with the belt, though. So if we assume he is no longer champion by that point, and let's say after he loses the title, Triple H kind of discards him, I could envision a scenario where Joe and Owens kind of come together to form their own little posse. I would much rather see that. Why do they need Papa Triple H to be there to help them? Why not beat the piss out of him? Make a bigger statement that way. We don't need you. And if you really want to get crazy with the fantasy book, this is gonna make people's heads explode because it's not like this is gonna happen. But if you really want to go nuts with the fantasy booking, I saw an interview that Joe did this week with a show. Let me make sure I got the name of it here. Eyes on the Game. I've never heard of it before. It's some kind of a podcast or a radio show. Anyway, he did this interview and he talked about his relationship with CM Punk and how they just missed each other. Only after Punk left did Joe sign with NXT. All their past history and Ring of Honor and whatnot. And he said, hey, you never know. One day you may see us working together again. Everybody knows Triple H does not like CM Punk. CM Punk does not like Triple H. Imagine the night after WrestleMania. Triple H gets hot at Joe and Punk shows up. And him and Joe both beat the fuck out of him. Hell, put all three of them together. Punk, Joe, and Owens. They could all make Kurt Angle's life hell when Kurt Angle takes over as the Raw GM. Talk about shaking things up after WrestleMania. That'd be one way to do it. I'd much rather see that trio than Triple H in there. But, you know, Punk obviously isn't coming back. I'd be fine with just Joe and Owens. Why does Triple H have to be part of this? Why, you know, I don't want to see it. I just don't have any interest in seeing it. Teddy Long was announced for the WWE Hall of Fame. Despite all that nonsense from last year, which it just blew up into something it shouldn't have. I have no beef with Teddy Long. I think it's a well-deserved induction. He's been around for a long time. He's been a referee. He's been a manager, he's been a general manager, he's been successful in multiple promotions. Hopefully they get a tag team to do his induction. I think it would only be appropriate. Why not Doom? Why not get Ron Simmons and Butch Reed to do the induction? Actually, is Butch Reed Butch Reed might be part of that whole concussion lawsuit. Yeah, I think he is. Well, you know what? Get JBL in there to do it with Simmons. They could do an APA reunion. So you could have APA induct Teddy Long into the Hall of Fame. Main event was Charlotte and Bayley for the Raw Women's Championship. They gave the women almost 20 minutes in the Raw main event. They had an excellent match. Now, one of the key spots in the match came where they were doing like a whole bunch of go-behinds, and Charlotte kind of got a cradle. And when Bayley fell backwards, she hit her head on the bottom turnbuckle. And they played it up like, oh, her neck. She grabbed her neck, and they kind of played that up for the rest of the match. Bayley made her come back. She went up to the top rope for a Randy Savage elbow, which is what Michael Cole identified it as. She hit a Hurricane Rana off the top rope for another near fall. Dana Brooke ran out. First time we've seen Dana Brooke on TV in many months. I think she's been training for some sort of fitness competition. So she ran out, and Bayley knocked her to the floor. Bayley put Charlotte in the figure four. Meanwhile, the referee checking on Charlotte. Dana Brooke reaches back into the ring. She rakes the eyes of Bayley. And Charlotte puts Bayley in the figure eight. So you think, oh man, that's it. It's over. She interfered and now she's got her move on and that's going to be it. And Sasha ran out. And Sasha hit Dana Brooke with a crutch, because that's her gimmick. Again, Sasha always with knee problems. That's her new gimmick. So she hit her with a crutch, and Charlotte is bridging for the figure eight, and Banks reaches in with the crutch, hits Charlotte with it. The referee didn't see it. Crowd's going crazy at this point because they could just sense the finish coming. And Bayley hit the belly to Bayley and scored the pin to win her very first Raw Women's Championship. And Sasha and Bayley hugged in the ring, and Bayley ended up celebrating with all the fans in the crowd. This was like the Naomi win at Elimination Chamber the night before, a feel-good moment, and the match itself was excellent. That being said, I cannot believe they had Bayley win her first championship on a random Raw. Just like Sasha, they did the same thing with Sasha Banks. All in the name of preserving Charlotte's pay-per-view streak. And I'm also sure for Bayley to drop it back to Charlotte in 2 weeks. I would not have done this way. This was, I don't want to say panic or desperate, but this was the wrong move. I mean, it was a great moment, but it would have been a great moment anytime they did it. It would have been an even bigger moment at a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam or something like that. It was going to be a big moment no matter what, because the people like Bayley. And it was going to be her first championship. To do it on Raw was just stupid. I thought it was incredibly dumb. And plus, do you realize that title has not even been around for a full year? And in that time, it has changed hands 7 times. 4 of those title changes have come on Monday Night Raw. Charlotte, already a 4-time women's champion. She'll be in double digits inside of the next 2 years. The NXT build, okay, with Bayley, building her to that eventual championship that she got in Brooklyn, was so great. And I hate that they did not do the same thing here, or something similar, on the main roster. Because it works so well in NXT. Now, I know Bayley already has her fans. I get that, and there is some crossover between the NXT audience and the mainstream audience, so a lot of people have already seen that before, but I wouldn't have even had Bayley win the championship at WrestleMania. I see everybody saying, oh, how come this didn't happen at Mania? I wouldn't have had it at WrestleMania either. I'd have dragged this thing out even longer and had her beat Sasha for the belt in Brooklyn at SummerSlam, the same place where she won her first NXT championship, in front of that same crowd. That's an all-time great match. You build the story back in the same building. SummerSlam, hey, look, SummerSlam is the second biggest show of the year. Still a big event. That's what I would have saved it for. But to not even do it at Mania, to do it on Raw. And once, look, your first title win, you can't ever get that back. Your first win is your first win. And you know, going forward, I'm sure she'll win it 2, 3, 4, 5 times like everybody else does. But that first moment is supposed to be special. And for Bayley, I just think they did such a great job building that story up the first time in NXT. The fact that they really just didn't even bother to do something similar here on the main roster to me is just so tone deaf. Because it would have made for such a great story. And they blew it. You can't put the genie back in the bottle now. I mean, you could still do Sasha and Bayley at SummerSlam. It'll be a big match, but the genie's out. And I hate that. I hate the fact that they spoiled that moment on Raw. Braun Strowman is going to battle Big Show on Raw tomorrow night. That heavy breathing you hear there is Vince McMahon. Speaking of Strowman, did you hear this story that Mick Foley told on Lillian Garcia's podcast? I didn't even know Lillian Garcia had a podcast. On her podcast about him and Vince. Holy shit, if ever there was an example of what's wrong with that company. So there was an episode of Raw where Braun Strowman had said that I want my title shot. I think it might have been that show where he confronted Kevin Owens in the back and reminded Kevin Owens of the fact that you told me if I did such and such that I would get a title shot. And Owens said, no, I didn't. And then he actually produced footage of Owens saying that, in fact, he would give him a title shot. So apparently Vince McMahon is backstage and he's watching on the monitor. I think it was a pre-tape in the back. Whether it was in the back or in the ring, whatever it was, he's watching it. Okay, Vince is watching it on a monitor. And Strowman mentions that, my title shot. And Vince just goes, oh God, it's not a title shot, it's a match. He wants a title match. And Foley said, if you ever wonder what it's like to see a 6'8", 300-pound man get chewed out, You should have been there. And I'm reading this, and it's like, it's not a belt, it's a title. It's not a shot, it's a match. It's not a hospital, it's a local medical facility. It's not the fans, it's the universe. It's like, it's bad enough that these guys have to remember all that bad scripted dialogue they get handed. They also have to remember which words to avoid. Remember that story. The next time you hear somebody like Steve Austin telling Dean Ambrose to take more chances. SmackDown Live. Poll, 1,767 votes. 91% thumbs up, 9% thumbs down. So if you had any doubt of where SmackDown stands in the hierarchy here, with at least the listeners of this podcast, we had an 88% thumbs up to 12% thumbs down ratio for the pay-per-view. And then for SmackDown, it was 91 up and 9 down. So I think people are pretty happy with SmackDown overall right now. And I can't blame them, at least when it comes to the main event stuff. I really am enjoying what they're doing. We had Bray Wyatt, the new WWE champion, out there in the opening segment. John Cena came out. AJ Styles came out. AJ said, Cena wants his rematch. And Styles said, well, I still haven't gotten my one-on-one rematch since I lost the championship. And you know what? He's absolutely right. AJ Styles is getting fucked over, which I assume is going to, they're laying the groundwork for the inevitable Shane McMahon-AJ Styles match at WrestleMania. I assume that's where this is going. And this all led to Daniel Bryan coming out and making a triple threat match for the main event, which did not satisfy Styles because he still doesn't get his singles match. But also, you know, John Cena doesn't either. John Cena kind of got screwed out of his rematch too. So they made a triple threat for the main event. We had American Alpha beating the Ascension. So anybody thinking that the Ascension winning on SmackDown last week was anything other than trying to make you think they had an actual shot to win that turmoil match at the pay-per-view, you have not been paying attention. This is a dead tag. I don't know how many times I have to say that to you. This is a dead tag team. When you see them on TV, you're seeing dead people. You're seeing ghosts, apparitions floating around. The Usos popped up on the Tron when the match was over. They cut a promo on Jordan and Gable, so it looks like we're going to get Alpha and Usos again, which, on the one hand, we've seen it. On the other hand, there is no better program they can do right now on SmackDown, given the teams they have. At least not until the Revival gets called up. There was a segment backstage where Dean Ambrose kind of bumped into James Ellsworth and Carmella, and it led to a match being made. Daniel Bryan made the match. It was going to be Ambrose against Ellsworth. And when Ambrose came out for the match, he was immediately assaulted by Baron Corbin, who picked him up and threw him onto a nearby table. And before Ambrose even landed on this table, it was, you know, kind of in the back of the arena there where they control the music and the effects and everything else. And before Ambrose even hit the table, literal sparks flew. There was an explosion. It reminded me of when Ambrose grabbed that TV from under the ring and it blew up in his hands. Ambrose is, he's had his share of bad luck when it comes to electronics. But in this case, again, he just landed on a table and it blew up. So they're definitely moving towards an Intercontinental title match. Hopefully they have enough sense to hold off on this until WrestleMania. But I could see them doing the match on SmackDown and, again, having some sort of a disputed finish, and then maybe the match at Mania is a gimmick match or some kind of a hardcore match or something like that. We had a brawl backstage. Daniel Bryan was trying to moderate things between Nikki Bella and Natalya, but they couldn't. They started fighting, and Daniel Bryan flipped his lid, and he said, you know what? I'm going to make a Falls Count Anywhere match. I'm going to make a Falls Count Anywhere match for SmackDown next week so that you two can handle this. And if that sounds familiar, it might be because I pitched that idea during the Elimination Chamber review I did on YouTube last Sunday. Because to me, it just made sense. You got to blow this thing off somehow. I figured they were going to have a TV match in a week or two, and they were going to make it Falls Count Anywhere. And so there's Daniel Bryan on TV making it a Falls Count Anywhere match. And I look at this and I say to myself, okay, well, I could definitely see Maryse getting involved, given what happened at the pay-per-view when she had the powder knocked all over her. And she somehow gets involved and she costs Nikki Bella the match. And that is the setup to a WrestleMania tag team match. Cena and Nikki against Miz and Maryse. Although, one of you, and I don't remember who it was, one of you suggested that maybe Maryse doesn't even wrestle, and they have Natalya stand in, and have Natalya team up with Miz against Cena and Nikki. I could see that too. If they wanted to extend the feud all the way to WrestleMania and then give the baby faces the big win on the biggest show. Yeah, I could see that. I personally would rather it be Maryse, and it's not like Maryse hasn't wrestled before. So I think she'd do fine. But I could see them swapping her out for Natty and just keeping Maryse at ringside. Yeah, I could see that. Mickie James had a rematch with Becky Lynch and got her win back over Becky. Mickie had lost at the Elimination Chamber, and there was a spot here where Becky knocked Mickie off the apron. Mickie started selling a shoulder injury. And she was telling the referee, "I think it's separated. I think it's separated." And Becky, you know, she could kind of tell this is bullshit, and the referee kept holding her back. And anyway, she ended up hitting Becky with the Mick kick and covered her for the pin. So Mickie got her win back, and this feud is going to roll on. We had Renee Young in ring for an interview with the new SmackDown Women's Champion, Naomi, who claims that she suffered some kind of an injury at the pay-per-view the night before, or I guess 2 nights before. I have no idea if that's just part of the storyline, if she actually did get hurt. I don't think she's hurt, but I don't know. Alexa Bliss came out. She claimed Naomi was faking the injury. She gave her 1 week. 1 week! Because she wants her rematch. TJ Perkins cut a promo backstage hyping his match with Neville on 205 Live. Oh, God. Perkins just has a face that's so punchable. It's no way. I mean, this guy's getting booed more and more. It's either that or all the dabbing. I think between the punchable face and the dabbing, this guy's going heel. He's got to go heel. Embrace your inner heel. Main event was a three-way for the championship. Bray Wyatt defending against John Cena and AJ Styles. And Bray Wyatt made his entrance. He blew out his fake lantern, the light on his fake lantern. And when the lights in the arena came back on, Luke Harper was standing there. And Luke Harper beat the piss out of him. And Luke Harper went to the back. So there were a lot of near falls in this match. I had one person write to me and go, "Man, you were so right about what you were saying about those, you know, the quote-unquote Ring of Honor main events back in the day, the Ring of Honor matches where you would have near falls like 5 minutes in and people kicking out of finishers left and right." And that's kind of where it came from. Because that really was a big part of this match here. Guys kicking out of finishers early, lots of near falls. Does John Cena play video games? That's my question. Does he not know that you don't go to execute your finish so early in a match? The person will always kick out. You've got to drain their energy first. Show them the first 2 hours of Raw. By the start of hour three, you can get the easy pin. Somebody needs to tell this to him. John Cena is doing this more and more. I still think he has great matches. I love the match with AJ at the Rumble, but if there's one thing that I would definitely like to see him cut back on, it's probably more than one thing, but one thing would be the constant attitude adjustment attempts. How many fucking times do we see him get the guy up on his shoulder? Like, at least 5 times. It's one of the things that I absolutely detested about the match with Rock, the second match at WrestleMania 29, which I thought was a terrible match. And one of the things I hated was, towards the end, at least they had enough sense to wait until closer to the end, but towards the end, all of the constant countering out of the finisher attempts, I thought I was watching something on a loop, like one of these like vine loops or something. Get the guy on the shoulders, he wiggles out. Rock bottom attempt breaks out. Get the guy on the shoulders, he wiggles out. It's like, enough, enough, enough. Drives me nuts. That's the one thing I wish he would cut back on, because I guess it's so easy to just get the guy up on your shoulders and he can wiggle out. How many fucking times, though? Nobody buys it. There isn't a single person out there who buys it. So why are you doing it, man? You know? Like, you've been doing this for 15 fucking years. Come on. You're supposed to be the biggest star in the entire company. You don't know this by now? Ugh. Anyway. So AJ, there's a spot here where they're outside the ring. Bray Wyatt's on the announce table. And AJ jumps off the barricade. He tries to put Bray through the table, but the table does not break. And so AJ, everyone's chanting, "One more time, one more time." And AJ gets back up on the barricade. This time he delivers a flying leg drop, which does in fact break the table. AJ springboarded into the ring. John Cena caught him for what else? An AA. Cena went for an AA again, and AJ countered that into the calf crusher. I actually thought that looked kind of cool. And Cena countered that into the STF, and it looked like AJ was about to tap, but Bray Wyatt hit the senton, broke it up. How many of you, by the way, I have a note here to mention this line that Mauro said. I picked up on this Mauro Ranallo line during this match. It might have been the part where Bray was doing his upside-down spider crab walk thing. He goes, there are no waffles in Bray Wyatt's upside down. And I immediately knew Stranger Things, since I just finished watching it. So I picked up on that. Any Stranger Things reference is okay with me. So that was cool. Wyatt, he's stalking John Cena. And as he's stalking him, he ends up getting picked up for an attitude adjustment near fall. AJ cuts off John Cena. He hits him with a Styles Clash, which has been completely bastardized. The Styles Clash now is a setup move. So Cena kicks out of that. So Styles goes for a springboard. Cena trips him up in the ropes. And AJ falls down to the floor. As soon as Cena turns around, though, he walks right into his sister Abigail, and Bray Wyatt, for the second time in 48 hours, pins John Cena clean in the middle of the ring. Sean Waltman on his podcast, because everyone's got one, he said that he was backstage at SmackDown. He claimed that John Cena insisted on being the one to take the fall in that match. And that was the first thing I noticed. You know, you have a triple threat match here. I just assumed Bray's going to pin AJ Styles, but no. He pinned Cena in the Elimination Chamber, and Cena was the one to take the losing fall here. If anything, they protected AJ. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I don't doubt that what Waltman says is correct. I have no reason to doubt that, but I only wish he had done the same 3 years ago at WrestleMania. Randy Orton came out after the match, got in the ring. He pledged his allegiance to Bray Wyatt, and he said he will not challenge him for the championship at WrestleMania. He is throwing away his Royal Rumble victory. He then kneeled down at Wyatt's feet, and they posed together to end the show. I liked it. I thought it was an interesting wrinkle on the road to Mania. We still have 6 weeks. They got to keep it interesting somehow. And on Talking Smack afterwards, Daniel Bryan made the announcement that, well, look, I can't force anybody if he doesn't want the shot. So we're going to have a Battle Royal on SmackDown next week. And the winner of the Battle Royal will challenge Bray Wyatt for the championship at WrestleMania. And so I see this going down, as I'm sure a lot of you do, with Luke Harper probably winning that Battle Royal, and Randy Orton then has a change of heart, because now he's got to protect Bray. Can't just let Luke go one-on-one with Bray and take the title. So Randy will have a change of heart, and he'll tell Daniel Bryan, well, I want to be in the match now. And we're going to get a three-way at WrestleMania with Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, and Luke Harper for the championship. I still feel like, you know, Randy is, I don't know. I feel like Wyatt's going to win at WrestleMania and keep the title. I don't know that I would take it off him just yet. I think you can keep this story going for a while longer. But I do think that's the direction that it's going in. AJ Styles is going to be in that Battle Royal. Part of me would like to see him win just so that we can avoid the Shane match and actually have AJ in a championship match at WrestleMania. But, you know, even if he wins the Battle Royal, it's not like he's actually winning the title back. And Luke Harper then becomes the odd man out. Luke Harper, he's in the midst right now. This is his coming out party. This is the first real big single solo push of Luke Harper's career in WWE. And he's been right in the middle of this whole storyline from day one. And so for him to just suddenly find himself on the outside and then end up maybe in the fucking Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania, unless he wins the Battle Royal, I want him involved here. I actually would like to see this be a triple threat match. And I'm okay with that. You know my feelings on having multi-man matches to end WrestleMania. This match ain't going on last. So, you know this is going on second or third from the top. Maybe fourth, you know? So, this being a triple threat, and frankly, either way, I really would like to see this be a triple threat. So we get Luke in there. It'd be a big, big match for him, even if he doesn't win. He deserves to be part of this. He has been a big part of the story. And hopefully that is the direction that they are going in.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week. The roar of the crowd.
NXT, Ember Moon was, in fact, Liv Morgan's tag team partner for her match against Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. And unfortunately for Ember Moon, she should know better than to be teaming with Liv Morgan, because Liv Morgan has not had a whole lot of success against these two women. They lost, Ember got knocked out of the ring, and Billy, was it Billy? One of them, I forgot who, pinned Liv. And so Liv loses another one. We had an in-ring promo with DIY. They came out, and they want their rematch for the tag team titles against the Authors of Pain. Paul Ellering came out with them and said that the match would be in 2 weeks, and DIY wanted it now. And suddenly the Revival ran in from out of nowhere, and they took out DIY, and they put one of them down with the Shatter Machine. Authors of Pain ran into the ring because they haven't forgotten what the Revival did to them about a week or two back when they attacked them, and so the Revival ran off. We got a video package hyping the return of Cassius Ohno. So he is on his way back very soon. William Regal announced a triple threat match for next week's show with Peyton Royce, Liv Morgan, and Ember Moon, with the winner meeting Asuka. I love William Regal when he pronounces these names. It's not Asuka, it's Asuka. Just like Triple H was Triple H. And Umaga was Umanga. So they will meet Asuka for the championship in 2 weeks. Why not Billy Kay would be my question. I don't know what the hell Liv Morgan has done to belong in this match. It should be Billy Kay, Peyton Royce, and Ember Moon. We also learned that Pete Dunne is going to be meeting Mark Andrews next week, so we're starting to see the influx here of the European talent. In fact, the main event on this show was the very first defense of the new WWE United Kingdom Championship here on American soil, between Tyler Bate and Trent Seven, the tag team partners from the UK, where they are known collectively as Mustache Mountain. This was an excellent match. Very much enjoyed this. Crowd ate the whole thing up. Again, these two guys know each other very well, so I really wouldn't expect this to be anything less than a great match. Tyler Bate did this great-looking dive over the top rope at one point onto Trent Seven. Seven came back with a Falcon Arrow. So Trent Seven has this move he calls the Seven-Star Lariat, better known as the Rainmaker. He went for the Rainmaker, but Tyler Bate ducked it. He used an airplane spin instead. And Trent Seven busted out a massive powerbomb, turned it into a single-leg crab even before Bate could kick out. It was like, okay, I know this guy's going to kick out, and so before he even does, I'm going to switch it over into a crab. And that's what he did. And the champion escaped, but he got his head taken off with a Seven-Star Lariat for a near fall. Bate came back. He hit an exploder off the top rope. Trent Seven kicked out. Seven hit a spinning back fist, but Bate hit a rolling kick. And then the Tyler Driver 97 for the win. And after the match, they shook hands. This was a great match. I really enjoyed it. And it certainly looks to me like they're taking a lot of these UK guys and they're going to start to incorporate them into the NXT shows. And the NXT shows could really use a real infusion of some good talent. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully they'll do the same with my boy Wolfgang. Hopefully we'll get him over here on NXT for a few appearances. Some assorted notes. Actually, they're really just a couple of TNA notes here. In a first, at least that I've seen, there was a match on Impact this week where the referee was blurred out. Now, I've seen WWE blur Ric Flair's big gold belt because they didn't have the rights to show it. I've seen them blur the Scratch logo from the Attitude Era because the Panda people fucked them over. I've heard the story of Vince McMahon wanting to put a blue dot over Christian's face on TV because he thought he was too ugly. But I have never before seen a referee get blurred out on television. But that's exactly what happened. The Hardys are doing this Expedition for Gold gimmick where they travel all over the world winning all different sets of tag team belts. They're building to their match WrestleMania weekend against the Young Bucks. And so they ended up in the Crash promotion down in Mexico, which is the company that Conan is hooked up with. The Hardys beat Super Crazy and Psychosis to win the Crash tag team titles before teleporting out of Mexico, which President Trump is not going to be very happy about. His big, beautiful wall will not be able to stop teleportation. During the match, TNA had to blur out the referee, who looked an awful lot like Marty Elias. I mentioned Marty Elias last week on the podcast. He's the referee from the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match at WrestleMania 25. He told the story about them only being slotted third originally and being given 15 minutes. He's under contract to Lucha Underground, and they threatened a lawsuit if TNA aired the footage unedited, so TNA had to blur the referee. I can't even blame Dixie for this one because she's not around anymore. This is just a matter of them not having their shit together. And then there was this. And this, you know, maybe it's just the headline. There was a story on PW Insider by Paul Jordan. And the title is TNA Management Answers Questions. And I look at that and I think to myself, huh, okay, well, let's see what's going on with TNA. This looks somewhat interesting. And I see that it's a recap of a Q&A that Jeff Jarrett and Ed Nordholm, who is the executive vice president for Anthem, did on the Impact Wrestling UK Facebook page. Because they were over, I think, in the UK. Supposedly they were having discussions with ITV, which is the big network over there that just aired that World of Sport pilot. They might be picking World of Sport up as a regular series. So, you know, they're making some moves. There's some stuff going on behind the scenes. They were over there to have some talks about what exactly, I don't know. But they put this Q&A up on the Facebook page. They're in their hotel room or something, and they're answering questions. Now, mind you, the title of this story is TNA Management Answers Questions. Okay? On getting a new TV deal in the UK, Jarrett said that the UK TV stuff is still to be determined. Okay. Then they were asked about the TNA Total Access app, which apparently is their answer to the WWE Network. Right now it's only available in the UK. So they were asked if it would be coming to the US or any other countries. And their answer? Plans are in the works. Okay. Then they were asked about doing live events again. And Jarrett said live events are very near and dear to him, and we should have an announcement in the next 30 days. Okay. Then he was asked about them touring India again. And his answer? We should have an announcement soon. Do you sense a pattern here? Then he was asked about which past TNA star he would like to see make a return to the company. He dodged the question. Then he was asked whether Global Force Wrestling will be working with TNA again. And he responds by saying, that's the million-dollar question. It's like, yeah, he was also asked about the location for this year's Bound for Glory. He said that hasn't been determined yet. Finally, they asked him a question if he has any desire to be on camera again. And he actually gave something of a real answer when he said that he's comfortable in his promoter role at the moment, which is wrestler speak for, of course I'll be back on TV at some point. But it's like, wow, what a question and answer session. You know, it's like, look at all those answers we got. I don't know. It may have just been the way the person transcribed it, but I thought that was hilarious. I don't know anything more now after reading that than I did before. And look, I know they can't answer some of those questions right now. There's just some questions that they can't answer, even if they want to. I mean, what the hell is Jeff supposed to say? But I saw that headline and then I saw the transcript and I thought, this is just ridiculous. This is the worst Q&A I've ever seen. Mailbag. I have a monster mailbag. I kind of felt bad because a couple weeks ago I had a very short mailbag. And I said, you know, I'm going to get to all your questions, as many as I can. And I stuffed as many in here as I could. So we'll just get right to it. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. First, some quick follow-up on three mailbag questions from last week. I mentioned there being a movie that was done a while back on Andre the Giant, and I could not remember the name of it, other than remembering I saw the trailer and it looked absolutely atrocious. And I remember, I do remember a movie called My Giant. Now, a lot of you mentioned that. Oh, you're thinking of My Giant, the Billy Crystal movie. It was Billy Crystal and George Mirazan, who used to play in the NBA. It definitely was not My Giant. But I knew I wasn't crazy, and it turns out that I was right. It was a different movie, a much lower budget movie than My Giant. The actual name of the movie was Andre Heart of the Giant, and it looks like a complete abomination. You have to see the actor that they picked to play Andre here. The wig they put on this guy. If Howard Stern fucked Carlito, I imagine that's exactly what their offspring would look like. I don't even think the movie is available for purchase anymore. I like to think they were so ashamed of it, they rounded up all 17 copies that were made available and they burned them. But anyway, that was the name of the movie. Also, on the Chris Benoit-Eddie Guerrero match, a one-night stand from 2005, and how disappointing it was, The person last week wanted to know, Eddie mouthed something to Benoit when the match was over. What did he say? Apparently he said, I owe you one. Because even Eddie knew that the match just really wasn't very good. I went back and I watched it again because it had been so many years since I did. And something was definitely off with Eddie Guerrero that night. Some just very sloppy moves. And it just looked like he didn't want to be there. And apparently there were some heated words exchanged between him and Benoit backstage after the match. It was not a good night for Eddie Guerrero. Plus, you know, he busted the bridge of his nose open during the match. He was bleeding. I'm sure that didn't make him any less grumpy than he already was. And finally, somebody asked about Chris Jericho possibly being involved in the WrestleMania 2000 main event. Was he supposed to be? He was, and plans were changed. Jericho mentioned he saw advertising and billboards being made that had his photo on them right next to Triple H, Rock, and Big Show that got pulled. Well, Ivan wrote in with a screenshot from the WWE Network. If you go to the WrestleMania 16 listing right now on the network, the thumbnail they use is the one with Jericho, Triple H, Rock, and Big Show. I think that's the image that they had used on some of those posters and billboards. And for whatever reason, they're using it now on the network. So I thought that was kind of interesting to mention. All right, Mike from New York. In light of the Festival of Friendship, it got me thinking. January 1992, Shawn Michaels super kicks Marty Jannetty and throws him through the window of the barbershop. June 2008, Chris Jericho throws Shawn Michaels through the Jarrotron 6000 during the highlight reel. February 2017, Kevin Owens throws Chris Jericho through a monitor during the Festival of Friendship. Logic would dictate that Kevin Owens is due to be turned on by a dear friend and then get thrown through a glass structure sometime in the distant future. What do you think? I think he should start wearing a helmet. That's what I think. Dennis writes in, I had a thought, considering the difference in quality between SmackDown and Raw. I agree with most everyone in that SmackDown shows and pay-per-views have been far better than what Raw has been producing. If this trend continues until WrestleMania, might it be time to somewhat hit a reset button on Raw? I say keep your idea about making Kurt Angle the GM, but have Vince come out the Monday after and basically tell Stephanie you need to step back and take her off of television. Just make Angle run the show. It might also help if you get Balor off TV until the Monday after Mania and have him join up with Anderson and Gallows to form a new dominant heel faction. What do you think? I'm all for Kurt Angle as the GM and facing down Stephanie. I said it earlier. She is by far the worst part of that show every single week. It's not even close. Holding Balor off until the Raw after Mania is not going to happen. They're already listing Balor for house shows in early March, so he's coming back. I would be okay with that idea, save him as like a big surprise for that Monday. But again, you know, when he comes back, he's going to want that belt back because he was never actually beaten for the championship. And you've got to reconcile that somehow, because if Brock or Goldberg has the belt, you know that they're not going to be around very often to defend it. I mean, Goldberg might be more than Brock. They could probably get Brock to work a Raw pay-per-view in there, but, you know, would people even buy into that match? If Brock beats Goldberg, but then has to look competitive in there with Finn Balor, is that going to be a tough sell for some people? I'm sure it will. So you gotta reconcile that somehow. But I'm just trying to map this out in my head. Like, if it's Goldberg and Brock for the championship at WrestleMania, and we assume Brock wins, we know he's not defending that title very often between Mania and SummerSlam. Even if Goldberg were to retain, how often is he really going to wrestle? If Balor goes heel, you need something for him to do if he's not challenging for the title. Now, it was Rollins who put him out with the injury, and Rollins will be back by then, and Rollins now is a babyface. So I guess, you know, you could just feud the two of them. You could have babyface Rollins against heel Balor. Let Balor and the club run roughshod for a few months, and at the same time, you keep building up Braun Strowman as an eventual challenger for the championship. But Balor should want to get that title back because he never actually lost it. So I don't know. I have to think about this some more. I have to think about this. Maybe the answer is just swapping Balor and AJ. I mean, I like AJ being on SmackDown, but I could see them doing that, you know, and looking at that as an even trade. Finn Balor for AJ Styles. I don't know. I have to think about that some more. And I'd love to hear feedback from you guys too on what you would do in that situation. What would you do with Balor? Because he is coming back very soon. Paul from Jupiter, Florida. What are your thoughts on Road Warrior Animal's Facebook comments about the Grammys and his rambling apology? You know something? I take back what I said in the past about Animal being part of that concussion lawsuit. You know my thoughts on that whole concussion suit and some of the names on there. I think he's the lead defendant, in fact. I think Road Warrior Animal is in that lawsuit. I can now see why. Clearly the man is brain damaged. That much we now know. I think the guy's got a winning case, and I wish him luck. Drew from Bristol, England. I don't have a question, more of a quick story you may find amusing. I was listening to one of the Sound Off extras you did, and you mentioned that the carts that WWE used at WrestleMania 3 and 6, you said that you wondered what happened to them. Well, I can tell you. I remember it very clearly. My parents took me to SummerSlam 92 at Wembley Stadium. As we parked our car, I remember seeing the two carts in the corner of the car park. It looked like, and by the way, I always laugh. I hear car park, like, again, we call them parking lots here, and I hear car park, and I'm like, that's a more appropriate word. Why don't we call them car parks here? Why does everything here have to be so ass backwards? Anyway, as we parked our car, I remember seeing the two carts in the corner, he mentions. It looked like they had planned to use them and then decided against it, so they just put them in the corner out of the way. After the event, I saw them again, but this time they had been completely stripped. Fans had obviously seen them and taken the turnbuckle pads and the ropes, but that is where they ended up. I imagine they got left behind and dumped after the event. I wish now I had gone back for them. I'm sure a collector somewhere would have loved them. So there you go. I guess that answers the question of what happened to those carts. Doesn't mean they can't make new ones. You know? They could just make new ones. Josip from Croatia. No, we don't get many questions from Croatia. Seeing Bray pin Cena twice in a week and finally hold the belt, I suddenly remembered the rumor that he was supposed to fight and lose to John Cena and Justin Bieber at SummerSlam in 2014. Was this match really supposed to happen? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about that, but oh, yes, it was. That was the plan. That was, oh, I shouldn't say the plan. That was a plan. That was talked about many months before. Kevin Eck was working. He was a writer. He was working in creative for WWE at the time. He has since left the company, as many of the writers did. I mean, the turnover rate with those writers is just ridiculous. So he was working for the company at the time. He was the one who told this story. It was supposed to be the Wyatt family. So you have Bray, Harper, and Rowan against Cena, Bieber, and Big Show. And what a trio that would have been. I think we all know how that would have ended for the Wyatts had that match actually happened. But they could not make the deal with Justin Bieber and his people, so it all fell apart. I don't know how far along they actually were in talks with Bieber's camp, or if it was just an idea that somebody spat out in a meeting and they briefly flirted with it, but it just didn't go anywhere. But it definitely was talked about. According to Eck, it was definitely discussed for SummerSlam as the main event for that year. You know that Bieber would have been booed so hard, okay? The earth would have split. There would have been an earthquake in L.A. I would have had Bieber turn on Cena and join the Wyatts. Shit, I mean, imagine that. Justin Bieber falling under the spell of Bray Wyatt. I don't know that he would have been able to grow out the beard, though. He just has that little peach fuzz shit, so it probably wouldn't have worked. Mike from England. Do you think the booking of Charlotte is hurting the other women on Raw? With the pay-per-view streak they are doing with her, it doesn't enable any of the girls to get that big win over her. They keep giving her pay-per-view win after pay-per-view win in big title matches, which to me, as Big E joked, they are desperate to make her a 16-time women's champion. What are your thoughts? Patience, young Padawan. Patience. I think it's going to help whoever finally does beat Charlotte. I think it'll be a big boost to them, whether it's Sasha, or if it's Bayley, if it's someone new that we're not thinking of. I think it'll help them. It certainly has helped Charlotte. It's helped Charlotte, you know, become that much more special. Now, has it helped the rest of the roster? No, it hasn't really helped. I don't know that it's hurt, but it hasn't helped. But to me, it's like New Day. It's like New Day going for that tag team record. That's what killed Anderson and Gallows. That and splitting them away from AJ. But were it not for wanting the New Day to break Demolition's record, we got to get to December. We got to get to December. So they couldn't take the belts off them. And so Anderson and Gallows, for months, they would lose or they would get these non-decisions. And it was like, these guys are fucking losers. The only reason they didn't win the belts until the Royal Rumble was because of that stupid record. Had to break the record. Otherwise, they would have lost those belts long before they did. So, you know, it holds, I mean, you could argue it holds some of the other women down, but it should help whoever the chosen one is, whoever they decide is going to be that person to finally, you know, get the big win over Charlotte. But look at Asuka. Asuka has yet to be beaten in NXT in singles matches, okay? I don't know about tag matches, but in singles matches, she has yet to be beaten. Not a single loss. And she feels pretty special. The downside of that is that the women's division on NXT has just been decimated. And only now are they finally starting to kind of bring it back to life a little bit. They got Billie Kay, they got Peyton Royce, they have Ember Moon, Nikki Cross, but it's nothing like it used to be. And part of that has been Asuka's dominance. She just can't be beaten. So it goes both ways. Hopefully if Ember Moon is the one to unseat Asuka as the champion, they make it out to be a really big deal. I would hate for, after all this time, somebody beats her and it's just, you know, it's just another match. Kind of like John Cena winning number 16. I look back at it now and it's like, wow, it's kind of just another match. Really wasn't a big deal. Although I guess they're bracing for number 17. Number 17 is going to be the big deal. Tynan from Sydney, Australia. Do you think Steve Austin's heel turn in 2001 pretty much killed the wrestling business? No matter how many ways I look at it, at that moment or after that moment, wrestling was never the same again. Well, it definitely killed off a lot of the mainstream audience, absolutely. No doubt about that. Did it kill the wrestling business? The wrestling business isn't dead. The wrestling business is weaker than it was back then. There's a lot more wrestling, but that doesn't mean it's stronger. It's definitely weaker. But it's not dead. I think the biggest thing, even bigger than the Austin heel turn, was the death of WCW. I think WCW going out of business is what really hurt the wrestling business more than any other singular event. And more than Austin going heel or going PG or any of the other things people complain about, it was WCW going under. And, you know, as bad as they were that last year or so, they still had an audience. They still had 2 million or 2.5 million people watching them every week. They were still competition. Barely, but they were still competition. The closest thing to real competition to WWE. Once they went away and their fans went away, they never got them back. And they've tried. WWE's tried so hard over the years to bring those people back and they just don't come back. And wrestling hasn't been the same since. Joshua from Rochester, New York. For the past 10 years, WrestleMania has been held in football stadiums and attendance numbers have been off the charts. Do you think WrestleMania will ever return to Madison Square Garden or any other smaller arena? Or is the event too big now? And which city that has never hosted a WrestleMania would you like to see host one in the future? Only if business suddenly tanks. I mean, if business declines and they can't fill stadiums anymore, then they'll go back to the smaller buildings. I mean, as long as they can put 60, 70, 80,000 people in these things, they're going to keep doing stadiums. If they were going to do MSG again, they would have done it for WrestleMania 30. So there's your answer right there. Where would I like to see them do WrestleMania? I know they've done one in Las Vegas already, but I would love for them to go back to Vegas if they build that stadium that they keep talking about. I guess the Raiders, right? The Raiders are looking to move from Oakland to Las Vegas. And if they do, they're supposed to build this beautiful new stadium. They would have to bring WrestleMania there. They would just have to. And the Vegas theme, Vegas would have to make a bid because they take bids from cities. But that's where I'd like to see Mania go back to. Any excuse for me to go back to Vegas. I'd like to see them bring a Mania to the UK. The fans there, I think, would make for a fun atmosphere, although I know some people don't like fun and they bitch about the UK crowd every time they tape TV there. A lot of people don't like the singing and whatnot. I don't mind it, but I know it drives some people nuts. All the more reason to bring WrestleMania to the UK. Jay from Dallas, Texas. Feels like Stone Cold Steve Austin didn't stick around very long. Who or what can we say is to blame for Austin leaving as early as he did? Father Time, or when Owen Hart dropped him on his neck with that pile driver? If not for that injury, would he have wrestled longer than he did? Well, obviously. He would have wrestled at least another 5 years, were it not for that pile driver. But my understanding has always been that Austin already had neck issues even before Owen dropped him on his head. I don't know if that's the spinal stenosis that retired him or just general neck issues, but the neck stuff definitely predated 97, and the pile driver just sped it all up. It sped up the end of his career. So it's very possible that had he gone, let's say, another 5 years full time, the neck stuff would have caught up with him eventually anyway. But yeah, in my opinion, he would have gotten at least another 5 years, and we would have gotten Austin against Cena and Austin against Punk and all those kinds of matches. I guess Punk came in and, let's see, Austin retired in 03, five more years would have been 08. It's pushing it. We probably would have gotten those matches though. I think we would have gotten that. I mean, his knees, you have to remember also, it wasn't just the neck, his knees were in terrible shape. But you know, you slap those knee braces on, it's amazing what you can do in there. I think he would have gotten another 5 years out of his career. Pancho from Arizona. The WWE 2K series features a power ranking system for each of their titles and modes like My Career and My Universe. Do you think WWE should integrate this on both Raw and SmackDown to help build stars up and make wins and losses matter more than they do now? Brother, I first advocated a power ranking system a long time ago. You got to go back to episode 127 to listen to that show. Episode 127 of The Sound Off was seven years ago now I did that show? That was one of the big shows I did back then? Go back and listen to that show. That was my, if Vince McMahon gets hit by a bus and I took over as the head of WWE, what would I do? That was the whole podcast. And one of the things I talked about in there was having some sort of a ranking system. Not that you put on the website or that you put in the magazine, on television. That's part of the entertainment. That's part of the storylines that has an actual impact on things. I think it would be a great idea. And I know they do the power rankings on their site now, but they don't mean shit. They don't mean anything. Okay? I mean having a top 10 ranking for each of the top titles. You put a graphic up on television every single week. The announcers reference it. They acknowledge it. It gives you some clarity, too, on where guys stand and who's next in line for a title shot. A title match, I'm sorry. Don't let Vince hear that. And if you want to play around with the spots, you've got the creative license to do whatever the fuck you want. You can have someone, let's say the number 4 ranked contender for the WWE title on SmackDown, comes out on TV and challenges the number 2 ranked contender for a match. And if number 4 wins, then he leapfrogs into the number 2 spot. You can do whatever you want with it. And for all the other titles, you have a top 5. So the 2 top ones get top 10, and for IC and US and women's and everything, you have top 5 rankings. That's how I would do it. People love that shit. Look, I'm a baseball fan. They say baseball's a game of numbers. People love stats and numbers, and they love to follow all of that stuff. They eat that shit up. Right now, you've got guys on TV. Take Rusev, okay? Rusev is a great example. You know, he's a boat. He's aimlessly floating around like a boat with no direction. But what if we saw that Rusev was number 10, okay, in the top 10 list of contenders for the Universal title? Better yet, Sami Zayn, okay, forget Rusev for a second. Let's take Sami Zayn. Let's say Sami Zayn was number 5, okay? Well, if Sammy's got really nothing going on at the moment, at the very least, you can always point to the rankings. And every single week, you can say Sami Zayn is fighting to move up in the rankings. He's fighting to move up to the number 4 spot. And that random match on TV against Rusev, like the one he had this week, can actually mean something. It actually has some kind of meaning. And let's say whoever is number 4, Chris Jericho. Okay, Chris Jericho loses his match later in the show to Roman Reigns. Sammy moves up. It gives these things a sense of purpose. That's all. Unlike pretty much any segment these days involving The New Day or Titus O'Neil, which has no purpose whatsoever. I want to know that what I'm watching has a a purpose and that it's actually going to lead to something. So I think power rankings are a great idea. Mitch from the UK. A lot of UK questions this week. On WWE's DVD, The Rise and Fall of ECW, Paul Heyman said very flippantly that the only reason ECW went under was because they were unable to find another network after their ill-fated run on TNN. He also said to anyone who thinks otherwise, they are dead wrong or don't know what they're talking about. Others on the DVD, like Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff, said it was mainly that one-dimensional nature of the ECW product and that it was destined to either go under or remain a small promotion because the ultra-violent content would never appeal to a national audience. Do you think ECW could have survived if they had managed to find another network, or was it doomed to go under from that point on? I think that they are all right to a degree. I think Heyman is right in that had they found the network, and they had talks with USA. I don't know how close, I don't know what ever got close to happening, but once WWE bailed on USA for TNN, they at least had talks about putting ECW on the air. That did happen. That would have been a game changer. For ECW, that would have been a game changer. Vince and Eric, though, are right in that the, that sort of ultra-violence of ECW would not have appealed to a mainstream audience. I agree with them on that. But was ECW really that ultra-violent there towards the end? Like, I think of the ultra-violent ECW days. I'm thinking of, like, not the early days. The early days would have been Eastern Championship Wrestling. But I'm thinking, like, 96, 97, 98. Like, that's where the real, like, ultra-violent shit was. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I wasn't, like, big on ECW at the time when they were still alive. But, like, I don't remember 2000 being, like, having all this ultra-violent stuff in ECW. I mean, maybe they did. I mean, when did mass transit happen? When that was pretty fucking violent. Although that wasn't on TV. But I don't know. I don't remember them being that ultra-violent there towards the end. And ECW was about a lot more than just violence. I mean, look, if they got on USA, okay, they would have had life for at least a few more years. So Heyman is right in that respect. I remember Heyman mentioning Acclaim, the video game company, owing them like $7 million or something crazy like that. And they had got, he's like, had we gotten the money from Acclaim Entertainment in time, we would have been able to stay afloat. I know the bankruptcy stuff, the ECW bankruptcy stuff was made public, and I think that was debunked. That might have just been a Heyman story. At least in terms of the value, I don't know that Acclaim owed them that much money. If Acclaim owed them anything, it definitely was not $7 million. The whole thing was just a giant mess at the end. Heyman owed a lot of money to a lot of people himself. He owed a lot of money. A lot of people who worked for him still have not been paid to this day, and they will never be paid. And I think in the bankruptcy stuff, it even showed that Heyman hadn't paid all of his taxes. He hadn't paid taxes to the state. They were going after him. So, you know, it's easy to say, oh, woe is me, if only we had been paid all this money. But it's hard to have sympathy when you think of all the people who got stiffed and all the people who got screwed over out of pure loyalty to the company. You can call it stupidity if you want. Loyalty, stupidity. You know, there were a lot of guys who kept working for Heyman who had the right to say fuck you and walk away, and they didn't do that. Now, does that mean they forfeit the right to get their money that they're owed? I don't think so, but they never did in most cases. So again, these stories about, well, you know, it was them against us, and if only we had gotten this, well, yeah, but only if you had, you know, paid your people too. So it goes both ways. Riggin from Parts Unknown. My question is about WrestleMania 8 and the main event between Hulk Hogan and Sid Justice. At the end of the match, after Hogan makes his comeback and hits Sid with the leg drop, Sid kicks out. And soon after, Papa Shango is seen in the aisle preparing to do a run-in, but abruptly stops and looks very awkward and confused. The entire post-match sequence came off looking strange and improvised all the way up until the point that Warrior ran in for the save. Did Sid go into business for himself, realizing he was soon leaving WWF? Sid didn't go into business for himself. Papa Shango was just late in coming out. I think he was supposed to break up the pin, but he was way, way late. And again, you're in a big building like the Hoosier Dome. So you saw at the Rumble at the Alamo Dome, they had to have the big guys driven to the ring on carts, right? They couldn't do that with Papa Shango, although the guy knew voodoo, so he should have been able to put a voodoo curse on the referee or on Hogan and break up the pin that way, but I guess not. But no, I mean, he was just late. You could see how confused everybody was, and look, I doubt Sid knew he was on his way out of the company before WrestleMania. What happened is that he failed the drug test. And WWE knew he failed, even before the match with Hogan, but they were not going to call that match off. So he wrestled, and he wrestled for maybe another month or so, maybe. But they said to him, look, you know, you failed this test, you've got to serve out your suspension. And so instead of serving out the suspension, he quit. And Jake the Snake is another one. Jake the Snake knew that he was leaving after his match with Undertaker at WrestleMania. Jake knew going into that show. He actually demanded to be let out of his contract. But I don't think Sid knew he was going to leave. I think, they came to him after the fact and said, look, you gotta serve out your suspension. And he said, no, I'm out of here. I quit. I think back to that period. You guys know my thoughts on 92. It's one of my favorite years. But man, they lost a lot of guys that year. I didn't really realize that. But just like out of that WrestleMania alone, they lost Hogan, they lost Jake, then they lost Sid, they lost Piper, because after Piper dropped the Intercontinental belt to Bret Hart, he disappeared. Then Warrior and Bulldog got fired later in the year. It's like no wonder Bret Hart ended up as a main eventer. Wasn't because of his great in-ring acumen here. It's because everybody else just fucking left. Tomas from Portugal. I think it's a real shame things between Lita and Matt Hardy came to an end, because I would love to see how things would have turned out with Brother Nero, Broken Matt, and Obsolita. I like that. I actually like that. Obsolita. I guess it would have been interesting. I never even thought about that until now. Obsolita. Could be, look, WWE let her go. It's not too late to add her to the whole broken universe in TNA if they could work together. I mean, look, Randy Macho Man Savage and Miss Elizabeth, they got divorced and they worked together in WCW, so never say never. Justin from Toronto, buy or sell on the better title win. I realize there were many similarities between Bray Wyatt's Elimination Chamber win and Mick Foley's first title win as Mankind. Both were a culmination of their respective careers after being long overdue for a title run, and both wins were spoiled beforehand. Which win would you buy and which would you sell? You gotta buy on Mankind. Buy on Mankind, sell on Bray. The Mankind one was literally spoiled by the company. That pissed a lot of people. It pissed me off, too. I remember when they went on WWE.com, and they just, right there on the main page, there it was, like, that night or Tuesday morning, whatever it was, like, boom, this big splash graphic of Mankind being hoisted up with the championship, and they actually used that to promote Raw the following week, and people were pissed. It's like, what are you doing on the main page? You're going to spoil the result of this match? The Bray thing, you only would have known that if you read the newsletters, you read websites and stuff. I mean, it became pretty well known weeks in advance, but not as much as the Mankind win. But the Mankind win was just such a better moment. I mean, I'm happy for Bray, and it was a great match. It was a better match than the Mankind match, but, I mean, come on. You know, like, that is, I defy you, I dare you to find me a bigger pop, a bigger crowd explosion, sustained crowd explosion, than the pop that Steve Austin got coming out when he interfered in that match. That building just, how the building even stood, I don't know. People went nuts. And all Austin did was he ran to the ring, he picked up a chair, he hit Rock in the head, and he left. That was it. No stunners or anything, right? He was out with a knee injury at the time, I remember that. And I actually remember reading that Austin was kind of pissed because his knee was hurting him and they wanted him on the show. So he had to fly into wherever they were in, Massachusetts or something, and do the run-in, and he was kind of pissed. But anyway, that reaction, that whole final few minutes of the match, and then even post-match, you know, with DX hoisting Foley up and the big celebration, and he gets on the mic and he tells his two little people at home, Daddy did it, and he does the whole, like, sprint around the ring. It was such a great moment. And it was so cool to have all those people switch over from Nitro to Raw, because Eric Bischoff thought he would be cute. And, you know, he told Tony Schiavone to make the comment about putting the butts in seats and, you know, good for them. Fuck them. They got what they deserved. So the Foley moment was much bigger. So I'm going to buy on that one. I've got a couple of non-wrestling related buy or sells here. I figured I'd throw these in just to kind of change things up a little bit. We'll end on this. Justin from Centerline, Michigan. Buy or sell? Full Metal Jacket or Saving Private Ryan? I thought that was an interesting one, so I said, let me throw that in there. I'm actually going to buy on Saving Private Ryan. I'm going to sell on Full Metal Jacket. Although it's been many years since I have seen Full Metal Jacket. I've seen it twice, but not for a very long time. Saving Private Ryan, though, was just, it's just an amazing film. I mean, that opening scene alone, that opening scene is probably the most intense thing I've ever seen in any film. They said, I remember them saying that there were a lot of veterans who went to go see the movie. They had to leave during that scene because it was too realistic for them. They couldn't. It was, I don't know, flashbacks or whatever. They just had to walk out. I just can't even imagine. Like, my grandfather fought in the Korean War and, you know, it wasn't Normandy, but he fought in the Korean War and he was awarded a Purple Heart. I would have been really interested to get his reaction to that movie. Unfortunately, he died when I was only 5. But I think it would have been very interesting to get his feedback and what he thought about that. And Jason from Greensboro, buy or sell on the Better Michael Jackson album? Uh-oh. I better choose my answer carefully. I know Webmaster Mike is listening. Thriller or Bad? Well, you know, I saw this question pop up in our Facebook group too, because I guess you just couldn't wait, so he put it in there too. I wish you would have waited until I did it on the show first, but I'm gonna have to cheat here, okay? So bear with me, because I have to bring the track listing up for both albums because I don't remember all of the songs from each, or at least I'm positive I'll end up mixing them up. So I want to just have that in front of me here. Hold on a second. So let's see here. Here we go. Thriller. And we have Bad. Oh, wow. This is not as hard as I thought it would be. I'm going to buy on Thriller easily. I'm going to buy on Thriller. It's got Thriller, Beat It, Billie Jean, Wanna Be Starting Something, and PYT. For those 5 alone, that makes it the superior album. It's like a no contest. The only ones from Bad, I mean, Bad, Man in the Mirror, and Smooth Criminal. So, I mean, and those are great songs, but, you know, I don't really care about the other ones. I guess I'll hear it if I have the wrong answer. I'll hear from all the Michael Jackson experts out there, but I'm going with Thriller. I wonder how many people would hate me if I actually said that I like the Alien Ant Farm cover of Smooth Criminal better, but I won't say that. This week's sick tweet of the week, not sad tweet, sick tweet, goes to Matt Jackson of the Young Bucks, at MattJackson13, in response to Matt tweeting to Dash Wilder of the Revival a screenshot of 6 shirts that he had just sold on Pro Wrestling Tees. And Dash hit him back and said, "Damn, 6 shirts, y'all retiring soon?" To which Matt tweeted back, "Around the time you guys get called up, so not anytime soon." Well, really nothing else to say after that. You just kind of tip your cap and move on to This Week in Sound Off History, episode 483. I am recording here as we speak on the March to 500, but way back when, we had episode 83, October 4th, 2009. I was previewing the 3 big Hell in a Cell matches that night, including John Cena versus Randy Orton, Undertaker against CM Punk, and DX against Legacy. I remember they actually opened the show with that championship match with Undertaker and CM Punk, supposedly because Undertaker was so beaten up that maybe he just didn't feel he could go in a long main event match, so they had like a 10-minute match to open the show. And this was in 2009. Undertaker was so badly beaten to shit. It's no wonder you look at him now, and it's like, God, this guy's still going. I also talked about Jack Swagger, in my opinion, having main event level potential and realizing that potential in the next 2 to 3 years. Well, you know, nobody bats 1,000, so what the hell are you going to do? Episode 183 from October 9th, 2011, talked about Vince Russo no longer serving as the head of creative for TNA. The completely ridiculous walkout angle from Raw. That had to be the night when all the wrestlers walked out on Triple H. I also had some candid comments on the death of Steve Jobs. It's like, man, has it really been 7 years since Steve Jobs died? It's crazy. And people worried about the future of Apple without Steve Jobs. Remember that? Everyone was panicking. What's going to happen? What's going to happen to Apple when Steve Jobs dies? It's like, can Apple survive without him? And meanwhile, Apple just sold more iPhones than ever before. So I think they're doing okay. The one thing I will say, though, I just wish we would see more actual innovation from Apple. I feel like we don't get a lot of that now. It's a lot of these like minor incremental upgrades to their iPhones and shit. We really don't see a whole lot of innovation coming out of that company, so. But you know what? I could say the same for WWE. But like Apple, if they keep making lots and lots of money, then that's all that really matters to them, so it is what it is. Episode 283 from July 14, 2013 was a road show from Philadelphia. Myself, Noah Mark, and Brian Blade on location for Money in the Bank. We did Money in the Bank predictions plus thoughts on the debut of the Wyatt family on Raw. WWE's new performance center. Oh, I remember when it was just a baby. They grow up so fast. Randy Orton's divorce. The unlikely TNA star that Steve Austin put over. How you can spoon. Tammy Sitch. There's a visual for you. Tammy Sitch, by the way, finally got released from the Slammer a couple weeks ago. So she had been locked up for months and she finally got out. So you may still have a chance to spoon with her. In episode 383 from May 17, 2015, talked about Daniel Bryan forfeiting the Intercontinental title, why the Ascension has no business being on TV, why TNA moving to Wednesdays is a good move. thoughts on doing a Sister Abigail storyline with Bray Wyatt. And is John Cena a better pure wrestler than Steve Austin was after his neck surgery? Oh, the reaction that debate stirred up at the time. So you can get all of that and a whole lot more. You can download old episodes of The Sound Off in the archives on thesolemonster.com or iTunes. You can go there as well, although I don't think on iTunes they go that far back. You can also find the first 10 episodes ever of The Sound Off on our YouTube channel. Just go back and you'll find them there. I want to say thank you again to everybody who supported the show this week with PayPal and Audible and bought a shirt. Don't forget, the new Sound of Orlando shirt is up in our store on ProWrestlingTees.com. Don't wait too long if you want to get yours before WrestleMania weekend. And I will be putting a Facebook invite up on the fan page. I'll probably share a link on Twitter and in the group and everything else. It'll have all the details in there about our meetup, WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd. Again, 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Tin Roof, Orlando. It's on iDrive. It's right near the Orlando Eye, the big Ferris wheel. It's about 9 miles or so away from the stadium. And we're all just going to get together. We're going to eat some food, have some drinks, and just talk wrestling. That's really the entire purpose of the event, is just to kind of kick back and have fun. I look forward to seeing many of you there. Hopefully we'll have even more than we did last year, because last year we did the live show / meetup, but that was the day after Mania. And I know a lot of you guys weren't able to make it. You flew home. You didn't stick around for Raw. So hopefully doing it before Mania this year, we can get some more of you. And I'm pretty sure, you know, Tin Roof, I don't know. I should probably call and find out. I'm sure there's not an issue if you have kids. I don't think it's, you know, you have to be a certain age. At least not at 11:30 in the morning. I don't think it would be an issue. So if you are coming in with the family, you should be able to make it. I'll try to find out for sure. But everyone is welcome, and I'll have all that information up on Facebook very soon. We'll be back next weekend for episode 484 of the podcast. So until then, be well, stay safe. Happy President's Day. If you are among the lucky ones to get a day off from work this Monday, 3-day weekend, enjoy the holiday, and we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. No, that's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.